Build a brain, build a brain. Once you learn to do it, you are never the same. Build a brain, build a brain. On purpose with Brain Broad.
Welcome to today's episode of the Brain Broad Builds a Brain with author, speaker, clinician, teacher, and show host Lynette Louise. Every episode focuses on how to help a different brain disorder. Lynette Louise is the perfect guide to share that information because our brainy broad flies abroad, working hands-on all over the world to improve the lives of people with a variety of brain dysfunctions. Lynette is doubly board certified in neurofeedback and actively pursuing a PhD in psychophysiology.
Okie dokie, okie dokie, okie dokie. This is the Brain Broad Builds a Brain. And I am Lynette Louise. That's my actual name. My actual name is Lynette Louise, but you can call me the Brain Broad. Been playing with that. Broad, brain repair, overcoming, amazing, awesome, awe-inspiring. That's a lot of A's. You don't really spell it that way. Dysfunctions. But you really can. I use neurotherapy to do it. But as we say, always, always, always at the beginning of the show, your brain is constantly in movement. It is either growing stronger, bigger, more amazing, or it's going, gee, you're not using me very much. I think I'm going to shrink back, prune back, and fall apart. So you have a choice in your life as to how you guide yourself. It's no different than how do you guide yourself with your body. Do you work it out? Do you go for walks? Do you give it nice, good, healthy food? Or do you, sit there and eat a lot of chips and watch a lot of bad TV and never leave the couch? If you do that, I promise you, in that case, your body is growing bigger, but not necessarily healthier or more efficient. In fact, I would bet against it. Your brain is kind of the opposite same. So as you just pile it with stuff, it does also grow bigger, but you have to pile it with the right kind of thinking and stuff that's reinforcing and stuff that's varied. You can't just sit there and give it the same old all the time, or you just grow one little area of the brain and the rest of it falls apart. Point is, you are always getting better as long as you want to be. And that kind of fits with what we're going to talk about today, because we're going to talk to somebody who began life. Well, I don't know how he began life. We're going to find out. But he, early in his career, he was in sports. And I actually, in looking him up and getting to know him, I right away knew about baseball, but apparently there's something in football, and I couldn't really find much of a mention of it. So we're going to get the background here before we get into where he's at now and how that applies to the brain. Now, obviously, being in sports applies to the brain, because you can get concussions and all that kind of stuff. You know, you're active. But that's actually, if you're thinking that's what we're going to talk about, you're wrong. But that's okay, because changing your mind about being wrong and realizing there's something else to learn would be good for your brain. And that's what we're all about. So remember, this is the Brain Broad Builds the Brain. I am the Brain Broad, and my actual name is Lynette Louise. At the end of the show, we are going to do what we always do when there's time, because there's not always time, because sometimes the guests are just too entertaining. However, I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to look up something that was mentioned in the show. We're going to do the Brain Broad Ask the Google Gods. How do you search that? Or how do you fix that? Or how do you find that? Whatever. We're going to play around on Google a little bit and see what we can come up with. And I promise you that with what we're talking about, I have some really cool stuff to add. So you really got to come back or stay with me all the way to the end of the show. And our guest, Tony Scruggs, he's going to be interesting, I promise, but so am I, because I have some ideas about empathy that I really think will tie up the show nicely, and, you know, there's not really a spot in the brain for empathy, so I can't tell you what I would do with neurofeedback for empathy, but I can tell you what I would do with neurofeedback to make somebody more open to empathy. And so that's what we'll go to. So make sure you stay to the very end. And now, without any further ado, I would like to introduce you to today's most marvelous, wonderful, terrific, amazing, supportive, actually really cute guest. And the reason that I want to introduce you to him is because, okay, I met this gentleman, you know, I'm happy to read introductions that people send me, but I didn't even ask him for one. I want to tell you why he's here, as opposed to read what he wants read. He can fill that in. He's here because I met him at a seminar, and right away, you know, sometimes you meet that person, and You feel like fate purposely sat you next to each other and then made you say the right thing so you knew where you would connect, and then made you look in each other's eyes and you, so that you would see each other's souls, and then said, you know, and on top of that, you have so much in common and so much intention for what you're going to bring to the world, and so that happened. And then, even better than all of that, afterwards, it stayed the same. This is a very supportive man who's very action-oriented. So I'm really thrilled to say that he stayed who he was when I first met him, which means you can count on him. So when he talks, when he says stuff, you can believe him. Too often people give me their best face and their best words because they're trying to impress me when I'm in a seminar or something, and then there's no follow through. There's no real stuff there. So if you're going to listen to someone talk about empathy, which is what we're going to get to at some point, you really want to do it with somebody who means what they say. And I think we found that man, a very versatile, very interesting Tony Scruggs. Welcome to the show.
Wow, it is a privilege to be with the Brain Broad. Empathy and compassion. And after that intro, I am absolutely, oh my goodness, I am filled with so much gratitude and so much appreciation. And I just hope that the listeners realize just how heartfelt that intro was. And I am forever grateful to be the recipient. How are you feeling tonight, spiritually, mentally, and physically?
I am feeling fantastic. Thank you for asking. I did just fly from Israel, so thank you for having this opportunity in the evening instead of the day. I needed the nap to kind of resituate my brain to the time zone. But I have this nice husky voice. My audience is probably thinking, is that really Lynette? Is that the Brain Broad?
Yeah, you have the sexy voice going on tonight.
Yeah, I do. I want to keep it, but I know it won't stay. But anyway, so that's how I am. My spirit is enjoying my sensual voice, and I appreciate that you asked. What about you? How are you?
Man, I feel spiritually grateful. I feel physically cheerful. And mentally, I am so enjoying the opportunity to speak with you tonight and give a shout out to my new friend, Dar. Hashtag go Dar. If you're listening to this, my friend, it was a pleasure to make your acquaintance. So that's how I'm feeling in this moment.
Oh my gosh, you're so awesome. See, okay, you just proved exactly what I said in the intro. Okay, people, so Dar, those of you who are new to the show or aren't constant followers, Dar is my oldest son. I have 8 children. He's the oldest of the boys, and he was adopted, and he's very challenged. And so I take him to seminars because he wants to be a speaker, which is an irony in and of itself, but that's not what the show is about today. So so when Tony met him, he was wonderful with him. But what I've liked, again, on this follow-up, and maybe we will back into your sports career, because I think that grounds people in who you are. But I got to say, I've never... And all the people I've met, I've never had somebody who remembers my son like that, remembers to mention him, and even gives him his own hashtag so that every time he tweets me, Dar has his own like little thing, Go Dar. I've been telling everyone about it. I said, you're going to have to start calling him Go Dar because Tony does. So, so Tony, I really, really appreciate that. And in fact, Dar is right here beside me. He loves to listen to the sound of the way that I talk fast and sort of full of rich information when I'm doing the radio show. So he's smiling right now. He always lays beside me and just listens. So, Dar, say hi to Tony. Oh, you're fun, he said. You're
Yay.
Fun. You even got the you're fun. All right.
Yay. Hashtag go Dar.
All right. Okay, so let's talk about stuff that they can follow, because I want to take us... Really, empathy is a very major component of how you build yourself. And since this is a brain-related show, we're going to have to get there. So let's start with, who are you? How come I found this obscure reference to football, but everything else is about... baseball, and I can't find another, but I have a picture of you in football, so what was that?
Okay, so just a quick who am I, and by the way, thank you so much for gifting me with your book, Miracles Are Made, A Real Life Guide to Autism. Very amazing and very appreciative. My parents gave me the name Anthony Raymond Scruggs, and I am a Montessori Methodist raised in Palo Alto, California. I'm going to say that again. I am a Montessori Methodist, which means I have both disciplined and unorthodoxy, which is a crazy combination. I am a Montessori Methodist raised in Palo Alto, California. My friends call me Tony. My teammates, football and baseball, call me Scrubsy. Some people call me the empathy guy. And my father, a.k.a. the Lion King, Mark Scruggs, calls me Simba. The reason being, when I was a small child, my father made the decision he was going to give me my first label before the rest of the world did. And as an American of African ancestry in this culture, being grounded with my original label of Simba, which now means spirit, mind, and body, but being Simba first and then all of those world labels second, I always remembered who I was. I was the son of the Lion King. I was the prince, and eventually I was going to be the king. So I'm going to pause there, see if you have any questions before I move on to my story of how I got to empathy and compassion.
Absolutely. My question is, when you say you are the son of the Lion King, can you just explain that more fully? Like, was he the person who played the Lion King? Is he?
That is a good question. So my father, who also is an American of African ancestry, happens to be a member of the LGBT community. So I am the child of a gay father. And so labels, the way that people associate things to you, were very important. So the Lion King has really nothing to do with him being an actor who portrayed the Lion King or him doing a voice in the movie The Lion King, although it was a favorite story and movie of ours. The Lion King for him was who he wanted to be represented as the day that I was born. He decided on that moniker, that idea as who he wanted to be as a father, and then the Simba piece came after that. And all the while I was growing up, the stationery I had, everything we corresponded with to each other was Lion King to Simba. Lion King to Simba. And interestingly enough, a few years ago, I did a radio show, and we called it Sunday Night Conversation with Simba and the Lion King. So that's where the Lion King comes from.
Okay, you are so interesting. Okay, we have to help people understand a couple of things. Like, let's start with, was your father openly gay? And how was that to have a father who was openly gay, especially when you moved into the sports arena? So let's go there, because I think maybe some of your empathy understanding might even be grounded in that. I could be wrong. Let's find out.
Absolutely. And actually, if you don't mind, I am actually going to tell the story of how I got to empathy and compassion and answer your question simultaneously. Are you cool with that?
I am so cool with that.
All right. Okay. So I talked about Montessori. When I was 4 years old, I was in Montessori school in Long Beach. And for those of you listening, just post civil rights, if you happen to be a cute, smart, athletic American male of African ancestry in Montessori, then you pretty much got to do whatever you want and had privilege all over the place. So I knew at a very early age what it was like to be given the benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt in relation to the detriment of the skepticism. And I will come back to those phrases in a little bit talking about privilege. But for this story and for the answer to the Brain Broad's question, there was a little girl who didn't have as much privilege as I had. And one day she was being teased. And even though I was only 4 years old, I realized the pain and the anguish in her eyes. I felt it in my soul. The other kids didn't seem to notice it, but I did. And I wanted to do something. I just didn't know how or what to do. So that's where the seed was planted. So fast forward to me being 12, and now we're going to come to my dad a little bit. I'm at home. There's a knock on the door. Two well-dressed young men are on the other side of the door, and they share their philosophy of life with me and leave me with a book. I'm going to be ambiguous for a second, but I think you'll catch on.
Yeah, we already do. Go on.
I secretly took that book, and for a week I read from cover to cover. And then after the week was over, so I'm 12 years old. Remember this, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm 12 years old, and I run to my parents, and I say, I just read this book. And I show them what it is. I'm still not going to tell you. Hold on for a sec. Here's what it is. And my father, my gay father, my compassionate 6'4", 250-pound former college football player father gently removed the book from my hands, walked into our library, walked back into the room, and handed me a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by, I think it's Maxwell Maltz. And he said, even though I love what they say in the book Dianetics, I'd rather have you have this book because there's no institution attached to it. At 12 years old, I didn't understand what any of that meant, but now I realize what it meant. And the whole piece that I got from Psycho-Cybernetics was, as you think, so shall ye be. So the seed was planted for understanding people's pain in Montessori at 4. Now at 12, I have a little bit of philosophy, as you think, so shall ye be. That's right around the time when I would be in the locker room as a college football player or as a high school football player, and I would hear pejoratives towards the gay community.
Right.
And when I was 8 years old, my father sat me down and he said, son, I just want to tell you, I am gay. It means that I am in a same gender romantic relationship. It means that I share love for another human being. That human being just happens to be the same gender that I am. Now, it's going to be confusing when you go out into the world and you hear certain things, but I want you to know that whatever happens, whatever decisions you make, I will always love you. You're my Simba. So, Psycho-Cybernetics, I'm in the locker room a little bit later, I hear the gay pejorative, and I made the decision that I either needed to protect myself or stand up for my father. And I realized the person that I was about to stand up to had my academic and athletic career in their hands. So I chose to silently disapprove and wait for another day, which came not very soon after. And let me get to that. So we plant the seed at Montessori. I understand the young woman's pain. Then I get at 12 this philosophy of, as you think, so shall ye be. Now comes to the fun part. I'm a freshman at UCLA. I'm 17 years old. Actually, you know what? This might be fun for a little listener audience participation interaction. So what I'm going to ask Dar and the Brain Broad and everybody listening, I'm going to ask you to imagine that you're a teenager.
I remember it well. I can go there. Okay.
Okay. So imagine you're a teenager and you're sitting in the dugout of Jackie Robinson Stadium at the University of California, Los Angeles. A mature gentleman walks across the field, over the mound, and towards you and your teammates. So if you're imagining this with me, here's the next thing I want you to see. The man was John Wooden, the legendary coach that led UCLA basketball to 10 national championships. And believe it or not, he was there to teach us his philosophy of life known as the Pyramid of Success. Unbelievable. And he started off with this mantra that he taught every player on every team. Never try to be better than somebody else, but never cease to try to be the very best that you can be. He said, never try to be better than somebody else, but never cease to try to be the very best that you could be.
That's true. My God.
Mm-hmm. I had the young woman's pain that I understood it for. I had, as ye think, so shall ye be at 12. And now I had, never try to be better than somebody else, from a man who won more national championships than anybody in the world and never talked to his team about winning. I was in heaven. and I'm
17
years old.
That's pretty amazing, actually. I love how you're telling. I love it. Okay, go on. Please, just go on.
Okay. So, a few years later, from the story, I'm hoping that you can sense that I was on the UCLA baseball team. So, a few years later, now it's my turn to take my crack at professional baseball. So, one day, 4 years later, I'm in the fraternity, Theta Xi. Shout out to my Theta Xi brothers, Alpha Zeta chapter at UCLA. And the house phone rings. Back in the day, it was just a house phone. For all you guys who can't even imagine not having your cell phones, back in the day at the fraternity, there was a house phone, and that's what we used to talk to each other. And my fraternity brother yells up, "Scruggsy, you got a call. It's the Texas Rangers." So I rolled out of bed, walked down to the phone, and got the news that I had just been drafted in the first 10 rounds to be a professional baseball player by the Texas Rangers. Who just happened to be owned by the President of the United States, George Bush. So, believe it or not, here's what I did. I threw on my Adidas flip-flops, and for any of you who are in college, I know you got some Adidas flip-flops. I grabbed a 20, I walked down to Westwood, and I thought about, what am I going to read on the buses in the minor league? Can you believe that? I didn't go celebrate right away. I went to go buy a book. I walked into the bookstore, and I decided in that moment. And, you know, actually, I take a little bit of that back. I did have goosebumps. It was a pretty exciting day. I walked into the bookstore, and I just decided whatever book jumped off the shelf, that's what I'd grab. I walked down one aisle, walked down another aisle, and then boom, like a magic light, I think the book actually levitated off the shelf, Unlimited Power by Anthony Robbins. I looked in the book, and in the first couple of pages it said, it's not what happens, it's what you do with what happens that makes a difference, and nothing has any meaning except for the meaning that we give it. I was like, what? So I read it again. Nothing has any meaning except for the meaning that we give it, and it's not what happens, it's what we do with what happens that makes the difference. So here I am, 4 years old, I feel her pain. 12 years old, as you think, so shall you be. 17 years old. Never try to be better than somebody else. And now at 21, I'm getting nothing has any meaning except for the meaning that we give it. So,
on the day that you just got drafted into pro baseball, you get that message. That's even more impactful. That's really amazing. Okay, go on.
Right? I'm glad that you noticed that, right?
Uh-huh,
what a lucky thing to get that message and to 3 years later to climb to the pinnacle of my professional mountain. So I was able to get everything I thought I want so that now I could go for what I really wanted. So I got that message, and I also got to reach that pinnacle by the time I was 23. So very grateful for all of that. So fast forward a few decades, and now we're coming back to my dad, and this is the little last piece of this story. Fast forward a couple of decades, and I get a call from the Lion King, Mark Scruggs, my dad, who says, I'm singing at a friend of mine's wedding. And I would love it if you came up. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. He was in San Francisco. He said, I would love it if you came up to San Francisco to watch me perform at my friend's wedding. Oh, by the way, he does seminars too. And before the wedding, he'll be doing a seminar. So I'm not sure I quite connected with the message on day one, but I had about 10 days to figure it out. And by day 5 or 6, I just kind of gravitated towards accepting the invitation. Oh, my God. His friend happened to be the architect, the late Marshall Rosenberg, happened to be the architect of nonviolent communication, the style of communication that moves us from our head to our heart. When my dad said, oh, by the way, he does seminars, I had no idea that this was the father of empathy and compassion in our current society. So I go to the seminar. My dad sang beautifully at the wedding afterwards, by the way. I go to the seminar, and within 4 minutes, Marshall Rosenberg says, empathy is hearing what people are feeling and seeing what people are needing. It is hearing what people are feeling. Are you feeling frustrated? And seeing what people are needing, because your need for respect wasn't met by what this other person said. Oh, my God. At 4 years old, I hear her pain. At 12 years old, I get the message, as ye think, so shall ye be. At 17, I get the message, never try to be better than somebody else, but never cease to try to be the very best that you can be. At 21, I get nothing has any meaning except for the meaning that we give it. And then at 35, I get the answer to the question that I asked at 4 years old. What can I do to help? What can I do to help that little girl? And that is to learn how to share, to teach, and to give people empathy and compassion.
To hear what they feel, but to give them what they need.
To give them what they need.
That's very That's incredible. And by the way, you told that so amazing. It was so beautiful. We were able to follow it and get the point over and over again. It's a wonderful job. But I still don't know what you did in football.
Well, for those of you who are Michigan football fans, in my days as a wide receiver, my quarterback in our double wing offense was the new head coach of the Michigan Wolverines and the former head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh. So in football, I was a wide receiver, and I had the privilege of catching touchdowns from the Jim Harbaugh. So that was my football life as a wide receiver. And in baseball, I was a center fielder, which actually, even though most people may not perceive that empathy and compassion can evolve out of that, as a center fielder, you always need to know what your left and right fielder are doing, and at the same time, see what's going on in front of you. So I was able to see what was going on to my left, able to see what was going on to my right, and able to see what was right in front of me while remembering that this person that is hitting 4 years ago in a game where it was 1-0 and they were facing this pitcher with a 90-mile-an-hour slider, they hit the ball this place. So when you think of empathy and compassion, or guessing what people are feeling and guessing what people are needing, think of me as a center fielder guessing what my left fielder is needing, guessing what my right fielder is needing, and remembering from 4 years ago what this hitter did the last time he was in this situation.
Wow. That's like the greatest analogy, and we're going to come back to that, and that's where we're going to pick up and get into empathy.
Build a brain, once you learn to do it, you are never the same. Build a brain, on purpose, with Brain Broad.
You are listening to The Brain Broad Builds a Brain. I am The Brain Broad. My actual name, however, is Lynette Louise. Lynette Louise is my actual name, and you can look that up, or you can look up The Brain Broad. If you just happened across this show and you're wondering, who was that amazing woman with that amazing guest? It's always easier to remember The Brain Broad. We're trying to come up with something. I think I'm liking that the broad stands for brain repair, overcoming amazing, awe-inspiring dysfunctions. However, what you really got to know is I named myself The Brain Broad because I'm a bit of a broad, and I have a brain. And I fly abroad, and I travel all over the world, and I help people with dysfunctions internationally. In fact, I just got back from Israel, and just before that, I went to Lebanon. The way I figure it, if I go everywhere and plant peace and understanding and scientific, accept each other because we look at it as a scientific basis for why we behave the way we do, maybe we can stop fighting and shooting each other. What a great idea. That's my plan anyway. I'm just going to do it everywhere. So that's what I'm up to. We are talking with Tony Scruggs, and he is the empathy guy. And he really is. And you already know that because you just listened to how he got there. It's an amazing story, and I'm excited to now get into opinions. And then I will tell you how that is going to shape your brain for the better when we are at the end. So remember to stay to the end, because at the very end of the show, I am going to do the brain broad as the Google gods. How do you search that? And we're going to figure out some stuff here about Marshall Rosenberg, I think. But I have a couple of other ideas as well. So hang in. Make sure you stay to the very end. Don't give up on us. We're having a good time. And I promise to tell you a little bit about the brain and empathy. We are back. Tony, thank you for letting me do my middle of the show, la, 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 la. Okay, so I love where you left off. you're giving this analogy of the center fielder and how one would have to have sort of this full view from the right, from the left, keeping your eye on the ball, keeping a memory of the history and having an intention for the present and the future all at one time just to play the game. So now let's apply that to empathy and let's go where you are today.
Well, I happen to be a proud member and architect of the Empathy Institute, which is a playground for peace, a special kind of peace. Speaking peace. At the Empathy Institute, we like to help people figure out fun ways to create a quality of connection where natural giving is possible and compassionate giving is natural. Basically, we teach people how to connect and communicate with compassion.
And is that your,
The Empathy Institute was, you know, I'm the empathy guy, and I personally love to connect one-on-one with people and, you know, being in front of an audience or like being on this show in this moment and realizing that one person could be helped by something that I'm saying is just miraculous for me. And somebody suggested, you know what, you need to do research on empathy and compassion and then put it together but put it as a little side piece. So I thought, yeah, you know, people think about empathy as putting yourself in the shoes of another person. But I was like, you know, that whole swapping shoes metaphor, it might be old school. So I was thinking maybe empathy 2.0 is more of a be kind and listen, you know, rather than swapping shoes, where empathy is an action plan. So at the Empathy Institute, we do research on ways to share empathy and compassion in the world. What works as far as strategies for sharing empathy and compassion in the world, and just fun ways, you know, whether it's singing or whether it's hip-hop or whether it's poetry or social media, fun ways to share this concept that I'm starting to realize is not as mainstream as I was imagining it was. But then how can I understand what's mainstream when I've had the life experiences that I've had, which include empathy training. I mean, a psychology degree from UCLA, empathy training in India with the Gandhi family, and then once upon a time playing Major League Baseball for the President of the United States. So it's just starting to dawn on me that I need to connect in a slightly different way.
Not to mention growing up a black American with a father who's, you know, gay and willing to share all this knowledge with you. And not, I mean, I think you're a little different. I'm a little different, and I've had the same question for myself. And let's get real a little bit here now. So when I was doing stand-up comedy, they came up to me, and I had all the kids, and I was just trying to make a living, really. And I'm like, I could go on stage and make a few dollars? Okay. So I didn't even have a sense of humor. So I'm trying to figure this all out. And the comedians are coming up to me and they go, look, like they're sick of seeing me bomb. And they're like, look, just write what you know. Like write the things that you have in common with everyone else. And I'm like, sex? Because I can't think of anything I have in common with everyone else. Right? So I'm like, but it's an interesting thing to talk about for a minute, because if you've lived a very different life, you've gotten some very different gifts, and that difference is part of your value. It's part of the advantage that you have and the disadvantage. So the advantage is that you have different perspective, you're able to see things from a different angle, and maybe comprehend stuff that other people are blinded by because they're used to it, looking at it a certain way. On the other hand, we don't have our feet in their shoes. So, you know, how do you overcome that? How do you play with that? And is this Empathy Institute your actual institute, or is something that you joined?
Oh, the Empathy Institute, I am the architect. I created it. It is my brainchild, and I love doing research at the Empathy Institute. I also love having an interview with somebody on the street and saying, you know, at the Empathy Institute, we're asking people this question. And I love how that is it's received very differently than, hey, I'm the empathy guy and I have a question for you. So I'm appreciating that my personal brand is the empathy guy and that my global brand is the Empathy Institute, because I realize that, you could have an empathy institute in any place that you wanted to have it. So I'm really excited about sharing it in multiple ways. And if you have any ideas, or if any of the listeners have any ideas, you know, shoot me. Actually, I'm not even going to use that phrase. Send me a tweet at Compassioning. I decided that I wanted compassion to be an action, so I added the ing to compassion, and that is my Twitter handle, at Compassioning. So if you guys have any ideas about how you would like to be involved with the Empathy Institute, or how you believe the Empathy Institute would be beneficial to an organization that you're part of, let me know.
All right, that's awesome, and I think they should. And I just popped into my head something. You know how you said, be kind and listen?
Yeah.
But you also just said it should be a verb, and I know listen's a verb, but okay, so be kind is a general phrase, right? It's like everyone has a different definition of what be kind is. For one person, it's slap your kids so that when they grow up, they won't do something. And for another person, it's a, you know, a hands-off thing. So we just have such different definitions of be kind. What about listen and act? Because here's the thing, what you're talking about is, at least what I'm hearing, and correct me if you're wrong, because I think it's time for us to kick this around a little bit now. And I'm going to preface this with telling you there was another gentleman who was trying to create empathy all over the world. He created this Empathy Institute. I did a radio show with him. I interviewed him. I went on his show. He created all these things. But the problem was he got some following and he got some action going. But the problem was that empathy sounds benign, and it sounds non-active. It sounds, you know, not very sport-like, right? So, you know what I mean? It does not sound athletic. So
nope.
I think we need to give people something exciting in it or something that they can grab onto. And I think it needs to be an action verb. I think you're right. So what about listen and act, or listen? What are your thoughts on that?
I love that. The be kind and listen actually came from something, if you guys remember from the beginning, Lynette, the brain broad, mentioned that we had met at a seminar. The seminar was a wonderful speaker named James Malinchak, and he talked about using language that made it easier for folks to understand. So I took the phrase empathy and compassion, which by themselves I do realize are benign, and I just decided that compassion was be kind and that empathy was listen. And when you just said what you said, I realized, okay, that may be a nice synonym for that benign phrase. You know, empathy and compassion, what does that mean? Oh, it means be kind and listen. Well, what is it? That's compassioning. That's the practical application of empathy. That is when we talk about, you know, instead of swapping shoes, we believe that empathy is an action plan. And that's a play on words, because plan is P-L-A-N. Empathy is a practice. It's guessing what people are feeling. It's a language. It's asking the person if they're feeling what we're guessing. So if you take those first two things, the P and the L, I'm guessing that, you know, this person is feeling frustrated. But that's the practice. The language is, are you feeling frustrated because your need for courtesy wasn't met when I put my car in front of you without putting my turn signal on? So that's the language after the practice. But then the A is the action, which is exactly what you're talking about. And that's where I believe that compassioning works so well, is that verb, if people can relate to that word being old and new at the same time, compassioning. And then just for you listening or following along with my P-L-A-N, the N is empathy. We've been taught that it's putting yourself in the shoes of another person. But the thing that I really want people to know is empathy is also this universal need we have to be seen, heard, and understood. So somebody could have the need for empathy while they are practicing empathy with another person. And I want you to think about empathy as more than just one thing. It's a practice, a language, an action, as the brain broad reference to compassioning, and it's the need to be understood.
The need to be understood, and then to be able to perceive that you were understood, and that's where the action comes in. So usually I say goodbye to my guests and I go to the end, but I'm going to take you all the way to the end of the show if you have the time. Can you do the next? Okay. So If you had, so here's the brain piece, people. So with the difference between the person, there are people who will say they work in psychology or they work in life coaching, or they just are that friend that everyone goes to because they listen well. And you'll hear somebody say, you know, this person, I'm getting too much of their pain, it's bringing me down, I'm getting a lot of depression, or, you know, I get burnout, I'm in psychology, I listen, I need to get away from it, it's burning me out, it's too much awful stuff. Here's the thing, it's not true that it's about being in someone else's shoes. It's about putting on those darn shoes, seeing what it feels like, and going, okay, now that I have a sense of what this feels like, if I did it, because you never can know for somebody else. I mean, it's different for them. But you get as close as you can, and then you say, what would I want right now? Now, sometimes the action is inaction. So you withhold, you know, you rein yourself in. You go, they really just need me to sit here. And at the most, maybe hand them tissue. But that's the action of choosing to not take an action. And that's still an action. Other times, it's, you know, they're telling me this because they need an arm around their shoulder, or they need a hand up, or they need a phone number, or they need a Google search, right? Whatever it is. And so there's no such thing as empathy without action. There's just sitting and wallowing in someone else's pain and using their pain as an excuse to have pain our own. So if you want to develop your brain well and healthy and strong and continue to be productive and reach out to other people, you have to have action in your empathy. Your turn, Tony, the empathy guy. That was the brain information.
Wow. That was phenomenal. And I realized somebody asked me the other day, it's interesting, you guessed that I was frustrated and that I needed respect, but you didn't seem like you were feeling my pain. She stopped, she's like, paused. Well, you understood me, and I love that. And I also love that you weren't in pain understanding my pain. She said, I love that. How do you do that? And I said, well, I was just taught that empathy is understanding what's going on for somebody else, and you can relate to it because our universal needs are similar and our universal feelings are similar. But to actually feel what the other person is feeling is not what I was taught that empathy was. That is a deep form of sympathetic energy, and yet it's not empathy. So I love what you said about empathy and being an action. And this seems like a good point. I want the listeners to know there is this cute little song that I learned that describes, here's an action that you could take. I want you to remember when somebody is sharing their pain with you and you're translating it into their feelings and their needs. So if you hear somebody say, oh, my day sucks. Oh, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. Oh, I just want you to hear their feelings and their needs. They're overwhelmed and they need to be understood. And you can just say, wow, it sounds like you're really overwhelmed and you're needing some understanding. I promise you, what you perceive as yada, 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 automatically, they will exhale, their eyes will open, you will have gotten them, and they won't need to share the story anymore. The story is being told because the guest for empathy is being requested. The only thing is that person doesn't know how to ask you for their understanding. So now you know. Guess their feelings and their needs, and I promise you the story will cease. But to make a fun version of that, here's what I want you to hear when somebody is sharing their emotions with you. If you guys are ready.
We're ready. Lay some music on us.
Get your kumbaya on. Here's the kumbaya. See me beautiful. Look for the best in me. That's what I really am. And all I want to be. It may take some time. It may be hard to find. But see me beautiful. See me beautiful. Each and every day. Could you take a chance? Could you please find a way to see me coming through in everything I do and see me beautiful? So that's what I want you to hear when people are talking to you. They just want you to see them beautiful. And for all you hip-hop generations out there, that was the original version of the song. Rest in peace, Marshall. I hope you like this. This one's for you. Here's how I hear it in my head. see me beautiful, see the best in me. That's what I really am. That's all I want to be. It may take time. It may be hard to find, but see me beautiful in your mind. See me beautiful each and every day. Could you take a chance? Could you find a way to see me coming through in everything I do? See me beautiful. Let the love come through. Peace.
Ah, we're clapping. Dark clap. You got to clap, clap, clap for Tony. He couldn't hear you because I didn't want the interruption of the speaker, but I'll play it for him later. You got a couple claps just on faith because I told him to. Hey, that's awesome. That's beautiful. All right, I'm going to do the Google piece now. So I decided instead of doing Marshall Rosenberg, that the brain broad asked the Google gods, what motivated Maltz? So Maltz, it's Maxwell Maltz, and when you originally were talking about psycho-cybernetics, I thought, you know what, since you talked so eloquently and really carried us through the story with all the talk, you know, the important moments and points that led you down that path through your childhood, et cetera, I thought it might be fun to do that on one of the books that came your way. So I'm just going to read this Wikipedia because I don't want to take a lot of time. We're almost at the end of the show. So Maltz found his plastic surgery patients often had expectations that were not satisfied by the surgery. So he pursued a means of helping them set the goals or the goal of a positive outcome through visualization of that positive outcome. The reason I chose that to read to you and share with you is because many of the population of autistic people, of OCD people, of sociopathic people, different dysfunctions, are said to not have empathy. But in fact, and they're also said to not visualize themselves correctly or have theory of mind in the way that we want. But in fact, we don't teach it to them. And I could do an entire show just sitting and explaining why that's true, but just to give you a short bit, I'm going to grab from what I just read and say that if we don't give someone a vision of themselves as an empathetic person, they can't step into that. And we naturally do that for children that don't have dysfunctions, but as soon as there's labels involved or we're finding them problematic and we aren't empathizing with them, we don't teach them how to empathize because we're already in a place of not knowing how. So it's our job to do it first, and then it's our job to pass that on. So I thought that that might be the perfect quick way because I don't want to lose Tony. I want to close the show with Tony. I'm going to, and that's not the way I normally do it, but oh, well, we're having so much fun. So I am going to tell you a quick story, and then I'm going to actually let you close the show, Tony. So, you can handle it because, after all, you were in the big leagues. So my quick story is that when I was learning how to became certified as a mentor counselor in the option process. And one of the things that you learn how to do is how to not take their pain and make it yours and make it an excuse for you to have a problem. Rather you stay in a space that enables you to help somebody. And so I was first learning, and I remember there was a woman, and I have 8 children. For me, losing your child is the thing that would crumble me. So she's up there, and she's talking about the death of her 2 children, and I immediately, of course, am empathizing to the point where I'm not actually empathizing anymore. I'm taking her pain and putting it inside me and welling up. And so my throat closes, my heart starts to race, my breathing turns shallow, my eyes start to water, and I was blessed with this clarity in that moment, and it was because I was on the learning curve, so don't judge yourself if you're just starting out. But I said to myself, wait a minute, this is not how you love anymore. This is not how you love. You have a new way to love. If I'd have only said this is not how you love anymore, I'd have still been stuck. But I said to myself, you have a new way to love. Your new way to love is to be an open vessel. Listen to this woman. Stop shirking from the pain and closing down your ears and making it your pain, but listen to this woman. So I, all of a sudden, the tears went away. I felt like an open spirit that could give whatever needed to be given, even if it was just the honoring of the space of letting her tell the story without interrupting and saying, please, I can't take anymore. And so that's the gift to me of the action that sometimes it looks like an inaction. And I would love to share that with you. Okay, Tony. That's the end of the show. Give them whatever you think they need and make sure they know how to get a hold of you.
Wow. How beautiful was that? Thank you. Mm-hmm. just three tips that I want to leave people with. I call this the when you like gratitude. When you like gratitude. If you find yourself in a complex situation, instead of starting with you are, which sounds like a criticism of certain situations, start conversations with when you. Instead of you're always late or you talk too much, start with, you know, when you showed up after the agreed time, I felt kind of hurt because my need for respect wasn't met. People are able to hear when you say when you. So start conversations with when you instead of you are. Secondly, I don't know where in this culture we started using the phrase feel like, but if you think about it, feel like is a metaphor precursor. So as soon as you use the word like or that after feel, you're talking about a metaphor. So if you want to use like, then you can use believe that, I think that, it seems like, and then finish on with what you want to say. But if you are going to use the word feelings, would you please follow the word feel with an emotion instead of a metaphor? I feel happy. I feel nervous. I feel scared. I feel excited. Follow the word feel with an emotion. And then the last piece, gratitude. At the Empathy Institute, we've discovered that gratitude is a circle of love. Giving is the first half, and receiving is the second half. The way that you give a gratitude, you say what the person did, how it left you feeling, and the values of yours that were honored. So when a friend of mine took me to the airport, I said, you know what? You taking me to the airport, oh, man, it leaves me feeling so relieved because my needs for friendship, my values for friendship were being honored. Now, that's only the first half of the circle of love. He responded, because we're boys and he knows the whole empathy and compassion circle of love piece, he responded by receiving what I said, which you can do in multiple ways, but just acknowledge what the other person did. A lot of people in our culture just say, oh, no big deal, no problem. But then you don't get to complete or connect the circle of love. So receive gratitude by saying, oh, when I did what I did, it left you feeling relieved, huh? Yeah, man. Well, I'm glad I could help. In fact, that's a simple one for you guys. I'm happy I could help. I'm glad I contribute. That is the way to receive gratitude. So I'm Tony Scruggs, the Empathy Guy. You can reach me at theempathyguy.com. You can send me an email at tony@theempathyguy.com. I'm on Twitter at Compassioning. And basically, I'm Tony Scruggs, the Empathy Guy. Actually, you know what? I'm going to pause, give a shout-out to Lynette the Brain Broad, and give a special shout-out to my new friend Dar, #GoDar. And then I'm going to go on and say, I'm Tony Scruggs, the Empathy Guy. Together we rise, together we fly. The way I see it, life's a celebration, especially when we observe without evaluation. Thank you.
Wow, that was beautiful. You've been listening to The Brain Broad Builds a Brain. I'm The Brain Broad. Lynette Louise is my actual name. And don't forget to come back next time.
Thank you for joining The Brain Broad Builds a Brain. To further connect with Lynette Louise, our award-winning host, email her at lynettelouise.com.
Build a brain, once you learn to do it, you are never the same. Build a brain on purpose with Brain Broad.